Well,
I don't have to be in Virginia at 6:30.
I don't have to be any place tonight.
Those of you who came up here, you want to be on time, and we didn't get that message. But Chairman Norness, who will be right up, gave us the opportunity to introduce those region candidates that had stayed through that agenda. So thank you for coming. My name is Jim Erickson. I'm the chairman of this orientation committee. Next to me is the chairman of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council, Jane Balow. She'll have remarks later on. And since we want to respect the time of Senator Fischbach and Representative Norness, who probably will walk in a moment, we are going to start. So why don't we do that? Mr. Burns, you have a place at the table here as a candidate, and you'll get a file with your name on it. Senator Fischbach, we'll do it sequentially then. We won't wait for, because I know you have a conflict.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that we cost you a few of those minutes. Why don't we go ahead and just very quickly let our candidates tell their names so that she knows who you're talking to, please.
I'm Steve Hunter, and actually I need to leave before this meeting's over, so it won't be anything anybody says, but I had a previous commitment I made when I thought the meeting was going to be over at 3:30, so... But I'll be here through the senator, certainly.
Bob Kennedy.
I'm Roby Thompson from the 3rd Congressional District.
Tom Devine from the 2nd Congressional District.
Bob Austin from the 8th Congressional District. And I, too, may have to leave early. Depending on how long we run, I have to facilitate a meeting in Duluth at 7 o'clock. So.
I have to be in Virginia at 6:30.
Should be carpooling.
Dave McMillan, a candidate from the 8th Congressional District, live in Duluth.
Bill Burns, I live in Duluth. I'm a candidate for the 8th.
Norm Rickman, the 3rd.
Abe Larson, I'm an incumbent in the 3rd District, and I hope to be still an incumbent.
All right. And on the phone, would you speak up, please?
Al Anderson, at large.
And? I think Laura Broad is intending to join us.
She's probably heard me before.
Okay. So, Senator, thank you for coming. I'm sorry for the confusion, and I'm sorry that not everybody got down there, but that was the timing. Please, Senator Fischbach.
Well, thank you very much, and I will just take a couple of minutes. I just wanted to take just a second in case, I don't know if you've explained the process, but in the House and Senate, in the legislature, how we handle it is the higher ed committees, the joint House and Senate, will put together a meeting and have a joint meeting and interview everybody. We'll have some kind of time limit, so we're not there. Right now we're kind of thinking about an evening meeting, but that hasn't been set yet. So we're working it out between, and maybe Representative Norness will give you more information on that. At this point, we're kind of going back and forth on how we're going to, when we're going to do that. But we do have a February 28th deadline. I honestly don't think we'll take until February 28th, but that is our deadline, just in case you believe that the legislature leaves everything till the very last minute. Plan on the 28th. No. and Representative Norness is here. But so we will convene a joint committee between the House and the Senate and have everybody there, and then we will vote on the recommendations for each of the seats, and then it would go on to the joint convention. That would be set sometime. I understand that there's a meeting March 10th, and there was a request not to have it that day, so that would be the day we wouldn't have it. But sometime with leadership, we would work out a day for the joint convention, and then literally They would take nominations from the floor. So that's both House and Senate would meet on the House floor. And so all of us are crammed in there. And then there would be roll calls on the votes, and each they would call out Fishbach. I think they go through Senate first, as a matter of fact, right? But
if you want it, we'll do it.
Oh, you'll accommodate us. Well, you know, and I'll just we'll egg him on a little bit, and we're the upper body, so they would. So
they get the uncomfortable seats too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Actually, this year I get to sit in a comfy seat up on the.
Oh, do you?
Yes, yeah. never had that pleasure before, but. Then we would do the roll calls, and that would be the official election. So that's just kind of, we don't know exactly the timeline yet. I said maybe you have a better idea, but leadership hasn't given us any indication when they want that joint convention, because it does take a little while, so we have to fit it into the schedule. But there was also some questions about, what we were looking for in regents. And, you know, I'm a brand new chair to higher ed. So what I'm looking for, and I can't speak for my entire committee, and I'm sure that you guys have, you provided them with lists of the committee, of the higher ed committee members, so that you can, when you're visiting with them, it'll make it a little easier. But, really a liaison from the university to the legislature. And I feel like we really need information on what's going on, what the money is going to the university, so that we have someone that we can reach out to. President Brunix was kind enough to attend my committee yesterday, and obviously your committee today.
Just a moment ago, yeah.
You know, on more of a day-to-day kind of processes, we're going through that budgeting and those. You know, and it's going to be a difficult year. That's the kind of thing, so that we have some kind of exchange of information and what's going on, where the money is going, because we're committing a lot of state dollars, and we have to answer to our constituents in the state of Minnesota too about those dollars we're spending. So in my mind, that is what I would like to see, is that kind of exchange. Obviously, we want someone who's involved in Minnesota, involved in, understands what's going on in Minnesota and in their areas, and has a feel for that area of the state, or if they're at large, the entire state, then they're in charge of dealing with the entire state. But, so that they understand and can represent that on the region board. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer. I know I'm tight on time, so I have to slip out. But and feel free to, give a call and make an appointment. I know I've met with a couple of folks now. But, happy to meet with folks and have a discussion or answer questions if you have any, either about the process or about what we're looking for.
Senator, if you have just a few more minutes, yep. let Chairman Nornes speak, and then both of you can answer questions. Chairman, thank you for accommodating us to introduce those members that sat through your committee meeting, and thank you for being here.
We could do it a little earlier, but time got away from us a little bit. But and that's the way it is when President Brunix is there. He's well spoken, and he has a lot to say. And our members had a lot of questions, so that's the way hearings go. So I think most of it's been covered. I just want to compliment all of you for even applying and going through this process, because it's probably not really fun.
Oh, come on. Hanging out with the legislators, that's always fun, guys.
Very time-consuming. I understand all of that and the commitment that you make just to get to this level. And the desire you have to help the university is... My oldest son is a graduate of the Carlson Business College and has a master's degree from there. And I have to say, it's he's been out of college now quite a long time. He's about 46 years old, 47 years old, something like that. But done very well, and so I'd like to thank the university somehow, in some way, of giving him a good education, because to their credit, I think he has done very well. So I'd like to see other students also have that same experience. So the leadership of the Board of Regents is very important, and the president that has just been hired, and so forth. The entire system, and not being a graduate of the university, I'm seeing it sort of from the outside, but through my son. So it's been very positive. So I'm looking forward to getting the process further down the road and getting a chance to. Through that process of voting and good luck. And I'll answer any questions that you might have too, but I think you've heard more from the Senate than I could have shared with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will ask
both chairs for the not I was chair years ago.
Gotcha. Thank you, chairs.
Forget a lot in 4 years.
Yeah, would you put a point on that February 28th date again, Senator, so that everybody understands what that is and what you're shooting for?
The February 28th is the deadline that the legislature has for the joint committees to deal with the issue, you know, to deal with the region selection. So
that's self-imposed, Senator?
Yeah.
We make the rules.
And I think that's earlier than it has been done in the past, if I remember that. Candidates?
If you had one question you'd like answered by the people who wish to serve as regent at the university, what would it be?
Why?
Yeah, maybe.
There are so many.
So I don't know if I can come up with one. I think you probably all have the same interest. So it would then just be, I don't know. That's the hard part for us anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm sure the resumes are all, you know, that wouldn't be a good. I mean that. It's a way of measuring, but I'm sure they all probably are exceptional. So that's not going to be a final.
Representative Norris, I would make a suggestion. My number one concern is figuring out how higher education, and specifically the University of Minnesota, reinvents itself. We cannot just keep on having tuition escalating. Now, as the president appropriately and properly pointed out, lower income and core middle class kids have not felt the same pain. Okay? And that's been for a number of reasons. Number one is a promise scholarship, so that lower income kids who qualify for the Pell Grant and state aid are getting close to a free ride, okay? And yeah. That's important because they can't, they couldn't take on the debt anyhow.
It's a very good program.
But we've got to get more and more income coming in to core middle-class kids also to help them because the either they don't go to college, which would be a disaster, or they end up with $25,000 to $30,000 in debt. Now, think about that. Let's say, for instance, we had a young person who was passionate about being a teacher, a social worker, a coach, whatever, and they're going to graduate with $30,000 in debt. Guess what? They can't do it. They'll end up making a financial decision about their career instead of what they're passionate about. I think that's bad for our society. So we have to figure out a way to reinvent, and I don't know exactly how to do that, but I do know that we can borrow some things from other institutions, large complex organizations who have reinvented themselves and become much more competitive. And there will be some higher educational institutions that do that, and they will survive and thrive and be a great credit to the society that they represent and support. And there are others that will not do it. And guess what's going to happen to them? They're going down. And we need to make sure that the University of Minnesota not only survives, but thrives. So we have to really work hard on trying to figure out ways to reinvent the institution, modify where necessary the culture. There's a lot of good things about the culture of this university. There are also some things that could be improved, very frankly. And I think that's critically important. And whoever is going to be a regent needs to be focused on that.
We have a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of them. I met a young man last night who has a master's degree. He's an accountant. And he's working as an accountant right now. His wife doesn't work because they have a child that's about a year old and another one that's coming soon. Living in an apartment now because he lost his house already because he couldn't find adequate employment. And the only reason I bring it up is that he was struggling with the bank over the house issue. the same time struggling with his student loans. And he couldn't pay both. So he lost the house, but he's continuing to stay current on his student loans because he felt that was very important that he get that taken care of. But in the meantime, house is gone. The bank wouldn't work with him. Living in an apartment. Yet he's got an education, and he's got a lot to offer. But the opportunities out there aren't that great right now. So there's a lot of things that we have to, and your suggestion, that's an excellent one. But it applies to, I think, the whole economy right now. We need to reinvent a lot of things to get things back. So we have those same young people with some optimism.
I agree with you.
We've now been joined. Well, we're about to be left by. When he comes back, I'll introduce candidate and former speaker Svegum. Are there questions of these two? We want to respect their time. And now he's back, so welcome, candidate and speaker Svegum.
We didn't get a chance to introduce him over in the big room.
Well, that's he wasn't there, and I think everybody knows. I tried to get as many people there as I could, and I didn't get the word out. So that was the problem. And I want to apologize to candidate Rickman. He was there for the whole thing, and I didn't introduce him. So I my apologies.
Representative Dornis, Senator Fitzrock. I believe it's true that some years the Joint Committee has been comprised of a representation from each of the committees from the House and Senate. Other years it's been the entire representation of the higher ed committees. What's the thought this year in terms of the Joint Committee? Will it be the entire committee?
It will be the entire committee.
In past years, if I remember, it also had the education committees.
Yeah,
12.
They've done it.
It got
variety
to be a large, okay. Large, almost unmanageable.
I've heard of 45 or 50 at times. Right.
Well, yeah, that was when it was both the House and the Senate education, both the House and the Senate higher ed committees, and that got gigantic. So this is more manageable.
Makes more
I think.
Sense.
And then there have been in the past. There's also been where congressional delegations of legislators got together and all that. But this year, very clean, very neat. Just the joint higher ed, that's all you have to deal with.
And that's 29, I think, between the two of you, 15 on...
You probably know better than...
14 and 15, I believe, is the count, so 29 members of the committees combined. Regent Hunter.
I know you haven't set the date for the joint meeting yet of the high ed committees. I guess this would be a request more than a question, but as much advance notice as we could have, I know a number of us, probably all of us, because what we do are busy and have busy schedules, and it'd be nice to have, you know, maybe a week if we could at least.
I would think that's reasonable.
We will do our best. That is reasonable, and we will do whatever. I can't imagine we'd wait too much longer to set that anyway. I know the CAs have been discussing it, trying to figure out how we handle it. It's, you know, whether we have a night meeting, things like that, an evening meeting.
Thank you.
Yep. Other questions from candidates? Mr. Kennedy.
You graciously offered for us to be able to contact you. What's the best way or what's the worst way?
Stop being mean in the hall is the worst way. I'm usually late for something. So, but you know what? Give my office a call, and if you have a panel, I can give you my number. It's 651-296-2084. And my legislative assistant, Brooke, who handles my schedule very, very well, will set something up.
You'll hear from 12 of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. Other questions from other candidates?
Yeah, one. Will you continue
yes, sir,
to communicate
Mr. McMillan.
With us about dates like that the same way we have been?
We will work closely with them, and we can be your part of the distribution system. We have a very excellent staff that can, the moment you set the date, all 12 of these people will know about
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, I mean, we could. Jason. My CA, Jason, is also involved. He's, you know, a committee assistant who's also helping to set things up. He actually, handles everything. I just sit here and give speeches. So, no. But I don't know, too. We could send something out. We've got everybody's address if that would be helpful, too. I know we've got everybody.
We will coordinate with your staff. Okay. I'm wondering, 29 people to see, not much time because it's a little shorter. Is there another step in this process that we might jointly work together on, something like a, I'll call it a reception or a gathering where we could pick a date early where we'd invite the legislators so they get a chance to do that? Does that make sense? The two of you should think about that, and I'm sure we would work with you if there's a meet and greet, kind of speed dating, you know, we could.
Yeah.
So we'll think about that, and if the group wants to do that, I think it'll be a lot more efficient for some of them. Anyway,
the first two times that I went through the process, I actually did have a candidate forum. I don't know if there's a plan for that. And I don't know if that was so much for the legislators as for the public or whatever. But it was in, you know, one time I was in a committee room at the Capitol. The other was a committee room downstairs where anyone who wanted to could come. I think they had a reporter from the Star Tribune asking the questions.
In other words, something like this, where mm-hmm. the public would be invited to ask you questions.
Yeah, I know they've done that in the past, so maybe that's a possibility.
The chair will take that under consideration.
Steve, when we ran last time, didn't we have a meeting over at the university in a large facility, as I recall? And there were a lot of people came and were able to ask questions.
I remember it being at the Capitol. But
okay, maybe I'm confused.
Six years is a long time.
I know, it's a long time for us old guys, Steve.
If we can find a mechanism that will respect your time and do things more efficiently, and these folks, we will work with you to do that, to find something where at least a cup of coffee could be served and there could be some exchange of information, because I know the daunting task of getting on your schedules 12 times, and we'll look around at that. Other questions from candidates? Thank you. Your staff will be in touch with ours, and Chairman Bailo would like to make a comment, please.
I just want to thank you as leadership in the legislature for creating the Regent Candidate Advisory Council, of whom there are a number of people here today to observe, and they had a long and careful process and picked candidates now for your review, each of whom would make an excellent regent at the university, as well as some of those that we probably did not end up on the final list. But we want to thank you for that, because we're honored to do that for you. And if there's anything else the council can do to help you, we're happy to do that. But thank you.
Thank you very much.
We think we've sent you 12 names that you can't go wrong with.
Okay.
Thank you for your time, and we appreciate it. And we will work with you on those efficiencies. Okay. All right. Maureen Reed, former regent, former chair of the Board of Regents, would you please come forward? And you're next on the agenda. I think you have seen most of these people, and you know most of them, so they don't need to reintroduce themselves to you. You've been watching. So thank you for joining us to share your wisdom. And we'll try and get a few more questions for you than the last time. This is not a shy group, so I'm going to encourage them to ask what they want to ask.
Well, thank you, Chair Erickson. I am really pleased to be here and was very thrilled to be invited. This room today is an example of volunteerism, both of those of you who sit on the Regent Citizens Advisory Council. And thank you for your tremendous work and many, many long hours, and many of you going back many years in this enterprise. And many thanks to the 12 individuals who are putting their names forward to lead the University of Minnesota on its Board of Regents. I'm happy to be here for representing the University of Minnesota Alumni Association. And my reason for being so interested here is the University Alumni Association is an independent organization. It has its own board, of which I am a member and the chair-elect. And our sole reason for existing is to advance and support the excellence of the University of Minnesota. We are passionate about the university being an excellent place, and we are passionate about the new alums, the next generation of alums, being able to sit in our seats and say, I got a great education at the University of Minnesota. I was able to engage in research. I was able to take my business ideas, my medical ideas, my educational ideas, and move them into fields around the state, around the nation. Our organization exists to advance and support the excellence of the University of Minnesota, and the excellence of the University of Minnesota starts with its governing board. Now, I've been involved with the Alumni Association a number of years. I, as Chair Erickson indicated, was also a regent and chaired the Board of Regents, and it was my honor to be on that board, and it was my honor to chair that board and to serve the citizens of Minnesota. I can tell you from my experience both on and off the board that the University of Minnesota Alumni Association, when it looks at the board and tries to judge whether the board is conducting its duties, the Alumni Association looks to perhaps three main characteristics that it would love to see in its Board of Regents and its in its individual regents. The first characteristic that we like to see and that we believe is a mark of every great board is individuals that know the difference between governance and management. Many people say they do. It is a smaller subset of those who actually do. And my guess is, as you go through this process in front of legislators, that you will be asked what is your view of management and governance and how you draw the line between those two different, very different skill sets. Some of the university's darkest days were the days when members of the Board of Regents did not understand the difference between governance and management, where board members involved themselves in management and failed to understand the deep importance and dramatic impact that the governing role carried out to its excellent status could be in the service of the University of Minnesota. So I would urge you to delve deep into your hearts and into your background experience as you think about the difference between governance and management. The way I would characterize the difference is that governance is the long range. It's the policy setting. If the decision needs to be made today, it is almost by definition not a governance question. It is probably a management or administrative question. The board's role as a governing board is to set the long-range policies and then test whether the activities of the board of the university and the outcomes of the university match those policies. It is not to get involved in exactly how those policies are administered on a day-to-day basis. So that is one clear indication of, in the estimation of the Alumni Association, a good board member. A second characteristic would be someone who understands that his or her role is to serve the entire state of Minnesota and not a particular constituency group. It is true that individuals are elected to the Board of Regents, eight of them, from a geographic region, but it would be incorrect to say that that individual's responsibility is to serve only the members of that particular district. It is instead to bring the interests and the perspective of that group to the debate at the Board of Regents. And then in the voting responsibilities, each member looks out for the university as a whole, not a particular constituency group. So I would hope as we proceed here and as this new group of regents comes on board that we would find individuals who understand that their responsibilities are for the state as a whole and the university as a whole, not a particular geographic region or a group of individuals that were particularly instrumental in bringing forward the final candidacy. And the third thing that I would mention, and I think it's an important thing to mention, is that the debate at the Board of Regents is very important that it be vigorous and that it be fulsome. But once a policy is agreed upon, once a decision is made, the board's role is to act as a board in furthering the success of that particular policy. So those are the three things I would put forth to you today. I stand ready to answer any question that you might have. but I thank you for putting yourselves forward to serve a most worthy institution who needs to have a great success, because the success of Minnesota depends on the success of the university.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I'm going to ask, we have two committee members that are sitting there. There are seats at the end. Bill and George, would you come up and please sit at the end of the table? And I think you will certainly be a chance now that we have a little bit more time to engage that. Oh, that's right. Excuse me, Rebecca. Excuse me. All three of you, let's find a seat there. And then let me just check. Mr. Anderson, are you hearing us, sir? And Ms. Broad, have you joined us? Okay. All right. Thank you. The floor is open for any of our, and I think a real dialogue. We have time to do so, and she has great wisdom. She's been through this process twice, and two of our members here have, but the other 10 want to know how to do it and what's going to happen. So if you, I'm sure you'll address that to their. In their questions.
I am an open book.
Members, or candidates, I should say.
I'll ask a question, and it relates more to the being a regent as opposed to the process, but I reviewed a lot of the videos of the meetings, and I understand the difficulty in having a public forum and heated, vigorous debate. You mentioned vigorous debate. How did you balance the need for vigorous debating on tough issues with that public access? And does that happen in a public forum, or does it happen underneath? Because I didn't really see any examples of, you know, tackling really tough issues with pros and cons going back and forth.
Yours is a very interesting and I think a very important question. The university, the Board of Regents, is a body that must operate in the sunlight. And so the debate needs to go forward in an open way. The way I would characterize the best kind of debate are the open-ended kinds of questions. The why did you say that? What makes this particular proposal better than this other proposal that is on the table? It's the inquiring kinds of questions underneath. It is not taking a premature position for or opposed to a particular policy decision that is in front of the board, but to ask the kinds of probing questions that allow then the group as a whole to decide what is the best answer here. I can't tell you the number of times as a regent, and I think we've all had the experience in our private lives as well, where we thought we knew the answer until we got with a group of people who debated the pros and cons, and then we understood the problem in a different way. It is that kind of back and forth that needs to occur. There will be disagreement. There will be times when the board members do disagree. It is very important, though, for the success of the institution as a whole, for the success of the university, that disagreement not be translated into and interpreted by Minnesotans as dysfunction.
Sure.
And it is that distinction that I would draw.
Okay.
Chairman, if I could.
Member Thatcher.
Ask a question that would illumine a bit more. I'm incredulous, Doctor, that you don't indicate that the legal requirement is that a quorum not gather. Anything less than a quorum can gather in the shadow. Only a disk as large as a quorum can gather in the sun. It has to gather in the sunlight. My incredulity is that there aren't meetings that occur at the shadow all the time. One-on-ones, one on two or three or four. That must happen just as a matter of human nature.
Oh, it absolutely happens. And the University Board of Regents has to conduct its affairs in the sunlight according to the law. So there are quorum requirements for committees. There are quorum definitions for the Board of Regents as a whole. But one-on-one discussion among members of the Board of Regents occurs all the time, and it should, because it is what illuminates. It is another opportunity to illuminate a particular kind of a problem.
Jim?
I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and invite Regent Beeson to the table because and then make his presentation, because I think they both will have perspectives to answer both questions. So I think when we get into the question section, unless you would like to do it now, Regent
Hunter.
I just
Hunter. Comment on what Regent Emeritus Reed said. Part of the debate, and you probably didn't see this if you watched the videos because they don't videotape the committee meetings, but right. The more challenging debates that I've been involved in where we've had disagreements amongst regents and things have most often happened in committee. And we rely on our committees to do a lot of the work of the board so that by the time we get to Friday, it helps expedite the meeting that the committees have done that work and debated out those issues. And there's other regents here who can tell me if I'm wrong about that, but that's my perception.
No, that's true, Steve. I mean, basically, the most rigorous debate, in addition to the small groups that Maureen was talking about, because there's a lot of work done that way, one-on-one or maybe three members talking about a particular issue and trying to, in effect, educate each other, if you will, and illuminate the issues. But then I think outside of that, in the public forum, and the committees are a public forum, the most vigorous debate tends to take place there. And, of course, being that it's a committee and they're focused on a subset of the policies, if you will, of the institution, they tend to be more knowledgeable than the entire board does because they're specialized and focused on that particular the work of that particular committee. So it kind of makes sense that you'd have more debate in that setting.
Regent Beeson, thank you for coming. You've been given the task of the how. Regent Reed talked about the what, but perhaps you can enlighten these candidates on the how, and then after that, both of you can answer any question as you see appropriate. Regent Beeson.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson, Madam Chair, and members of the RCAC. I'll just add one quick comment to finish the last discussion. That is that, and I agree with every comment that was made by my colleagues and Dr. Reed. The other point I would make is that the staff work tends to be quite excellent as it relates to the items that are brought before the board. And the reading material, the facts, and the analysis are pretty substantial and persuasive. Now, that's just a personal opinion, but it's one that I feel strongly about. And a lot of these are transactions where as opposed to strategic discussions. So I would just make that comment. I do have some written remarks. Again, thank you for letting me appear today. Congratulations to all the candidates for getting here to the foothills of the state capitol. I know this is in your playground, Jim, and others. I'm not going to have this be a political primer, but I am going to give you some ideas, having been the only new region to emerge 2 years ago. It's still fresh in my mind. I still wake up at night thinking about the ordeal, and I'm reminded of it as I come over here. So I do have opinions, and I want to share those with you in hopes that it makes your candidacy more pleasant and more effective.
You didn't need a blood transfusion, did you, Rick?
No.
Okay, you made it.
I did. As a candidate at this stage, it is difficult to grasp what this position really entails, what the expectations are, if you will. And more specifically, running at the legislature is a microcosm of the state, and it's going to give you a sense of the state's vision, whether it's shared or it's disparate, about the University of Minnesota and about higher education. I'm a banker by background. I've been a banker for 20 years. Before that, I was a city planner. I've been involved with 40, 50 boards and committees, have a lot of community development experience, worked on the Central Corridor, live in St. Paul. I came elected out of the 4th District. Number one, commit yourself to take the high road. And what do I mean by that? What I mean is don't talk about your opponent's weaknesses. They're going to be apparent to the legislators, whether that's inexperience in certain areas. Nobody's going to be fully developed as a candidate. The legislators don't need you to point out their weaknesses directly. I was fortunate in my race to be facing really a highly professional and classy opponent. We ran on our capabilities as they matched up with the university's needs, and hopefully the legislature made the decision on that basis. So behave in a manner that's in keeping with the importance of the position. It's the right thing to do. Second, focus on building a coalition of support. Obviously, you're entering the ultimate political environment. However, the job of the region is not political in its essence, and the issues we deal with on a monthly basis do not break along traditional party lines. That's not to say there aren't political considerations on every decision. There are. But they have more to do with the relationship the region has with the president or with the colleagues. So it's very, very, and the overarching goals of the university. Put yourself above the fray. Focus on the needs of the institution and your ability and willingness to make a difference. There will be some politically based decisions made here at the Capitol, but that's their job and it's not yours. Don't be directing traffic that way. And remember, some of you may have to run again, and their memories are very long around here. So how you leave this process is really important. Third, find champions who carry your name around along the corridors. Again, on both sides of the aisle if possible. Ideally, they should be in positions of leadership in the higher education committee or just have general seniority or in your district. But you do need advocates. You'll either build them along the way or you bring them to the process. As with all issues, legislators take their cues from their colleagues with whom they have confidence, whether it's areas of expertise or just people that they look to for their opinions. It could be the leadership. Fourth, commit to working hard. That matters, especially in the House of Representatives. That's how they got here, through door knocking, through shoe leather. You're going to be frustrated with how difficult it is to get access to the Senate. They're more guarded. It's harder to get appointments. That's just sort of the way that works. But if you bring energy and commitment, it's assumed you're going to bring that to the job as well. Fifth, in addition to your own bio sheet, which I would assume you'll be putting together, put together a written list of your supporters. To legislators, candidates will sound more similar than different. And it's important, if you're an unknown, to differentiate yourself by presenting yourself through the support of others. Select opinion makers, leaders in your industry or your communities. Make this kind of connection. Making this connection through a third party is really powerful and credible. Also focus on leaders who have a different orientation. In my case, I was able to get some labor leadership because of my work on the Central Corridor. I also had a substantial background with the Chamber of Commerce, and I was able to build a two-party coalition. Six, as you talk with legislators, focus on the key strategic issues, not necessarily the narrow issues that are of particular interest to you or the legislators. Remember, successfully governing the University of Minnesota relies on making progress on the strategic plan, the big picture. Not that these micro issues aren't important, they are. But don't let the conversations go that direction and dominate your meetings with the legislators. Resist giving opinions on specific issues. You're really not in a position until you're in office to understand them in the way that Dr. Reed. You may have a strong opinion, but they're relatively uninformed in most cases because you have not had the information to do the analysis. I can remember a couple of conversations with a legislator. One wanted to know my position about the university's fleet. You know, why were we leasing or were we buying? She just was very focused on that, and I couldn't get the conversation to talk about the more strategic issues. Another legislator wanted to talk about the carbon neutral footprint. Again, not unimportant, but, you know, that's a management and administrative sort of response. Most of the legislators have not attended the university, and they're going to have a more impressionistic sense of the institution versus firsthand knowledge. So you have to sort of work with them in providing facts. I would reread the accountability report. When I ran, I didn't have that. I barely knew there was one that existed, but that will give you the best sense of how we're working the plan. And of course, the strategic plan itself, I would reread as well. This is number seven, be courteous and polite. How you go about the process, the how is very important. It's going to get noticed, your style and your tactics. Finally, get to know the lobbyists. They're a welcome break during long periods of downtime, and it can be a pretty good source of information. They're good storytellers and can bring a little levity to a long day. And, of course, be courteous to the support staff. They are the holders of the appointment books, and they have their own networks and opinions as you go along. So thank you, and good luck in the weeks ahead, and I'll stand for questions as Dr. Riebel.
We'll open the floor, and when you pose a question, we'll ask both of you. Perhaps one looks at the other and says, take it, and you're both willing and able to answer it, as you can add value, which you have done already. This is your chance to learn a lot. This is a high level. This is a graduate course in running for regents. This is not 101.
I have a question.
Mr. Burns.
I'll be the first one to say I didn't have the courage to ask Senator Fishback this question, but her comment was that she saw Regents as being a liaison with the legislature. And that's never been the way I saw a job like this. I don't know whether that – so it just surprised me. I wonder as Regents how you feel about that comment. And I'm not. It's not about Senator Fishback, obviously. It's about the question of the liaison with the legislature.
I took note of that comment as well, and in fact, I jotted it down because it surprised me in a way. I see the role of the regents to govern the University of Minnesota. The regents also, though, must be eyes and ears. It is immensely helpful for the university and for the legislature to have committed, knowledgeable people who understand both realms, who can say, yes, I will take your concern back. The dilemma that Senator Fishback's challenge posed, though, is that many of the issues that come up from a legislator's standpoint are management issues. They are not governance issues.
That was my gut.
Mm-hmm. And so even as Regent Beeson had indicated an example of a topic, you know, what is the university's fleet owned or leased? That is a management question. So the savvy and the competent regent must be the eyes and ears, but must also, in talking with a senator or representative, be able to say, thank you very much. I believe I understand the essence of your question. It seems to me that that question is best directed towards the vice president of university relations or that something else. I will make sure that the appropriate person at the university hears of your issue and gets back to you. That's the liaison role that I think is most fitting a regent. There's another issue that regents get confronted with when they are in office, and that is, don't you think, Regent so-and-so, that the university ought to do X, Y, and Z when it comes to this particular policy? Well, as an individual regent, you may well have an opinion about that. But if it is not the considered opinion of the group as a whole, it is very thin ice to skate on, to start giving opinions about this potential policy or this policy. If it's the policy of the Board of Regents and it's already been acted upon, it is, I believe, a regent's responsibility to outline for that legislator why the policy came to be in this particular form and not be not take a position opposed to a policy that the University Board of Regents has passed.
Jim Beeson?
Mr. Burns, I would add, maybe take a little direction with it, which is, and I've been public about this, I do think the regents could be utilized more heavily at the Capitol. There's risk to that because we're we're trying to control the message. You know, we're a large public corporation, and the message has to emanate from the administration, and there's risk to losing the message. But I do think, and I come over here informally and meet with legislators occasionally, I think that there is a little better role for that, and we've talked with the president about it, and they're thinking of doing that. It has to be thought through in terms of, you know, more formal interface with the legislature.
Candidates? Speaker Swigel.
I was very interested in your analysis of the process and the approach of legislators. Having been there and having voted for three individuals in this room myself, of which I'm proud to have done, Dr. Reed, I was interested in your approach and especially your last comment about a coordinated need of the regions to make an appearance with legislators or legislature. My perception was, and perception becomes reality, that I would see region candidates for 3 weeks out of the year when they were being elected and never see them again for 6 years. And it's too important a position. To the legislature and the citizen trust is too important to the university to let that happen. When you're just asking for $1.5 billion out of a budget that's decreasing, it's just too important. Dr. Reed, my question for you is this. The Alumni Association, how would you judge the performance of the university and the performance then, therefore, of the regents? What's your benchmark? What's your standard of judging whether the university or the regents have done a good job or not? More specifically, a specific benchmark, more than just not representing just your congressional district that you get nominated from. You mentioned three different things. Give me your benchmark as far as what performance, how you would measure it from the Alumni Association.
We look at the university's goals, and the university has set itself the goal to be among the top public research universities in the world. And so as we look at the university as a University of Minnesota Alumni Association, we are looking to see whether that goal is being advanced. There's a lot of ways to define it. Do you look at this measure or that measure? How do you
come in or whatever?
Oh gosh, you know, there's a gazillion facets to that. But that is the test of whether the University of Minnesota is living up to its own expectation, its own goal of being among the best public research institutions in the world. There's another thing that I look at when I look at the University of Minnesota, and I ask myself, is this university serving the people of Minnesota and likely to serve the people of Minnesota in the next decade or two in the same way, with the same effectiveness it did in the 1930s and 40s and 70s and 80s? That is it turning out research? What are the marks of turning out research? Is it patents? Is it conversion of patents into business ideas? Is it research dollars coming in? Is it the preparedness of the student body that is being admitted? Is it the graduation rates? A lot of different ways to measure that. You have to look as a composite. And as a regent, that is exactly what a person is doing, meeting by meeting, month by month, year by year. Is the university living up to its own aspirations? Did I answer your question?
Okay. Candidates, this is your chance to learn. No tuition. Alan. Thank you. I was going to get back to you, but thank you for jumping in. Alan Anderson, please. At-large candidate.
Just a question about the committee system. How often do the various committees meet, and how are the members selected? And are they primarily based upon their past experience or their interests or a combination thereof?
Mr. Anderson, this is Rick Beeson. The selection of the committee members are made by the chair in consultation with the vice chair. I think there is an attempt to match up the abilities with the requirements of those positions. The committees meet monthly, and a lot of the heavy work goes on. The strategic planning session that occurs during summer drives the work plan that starts in the fall. And out of the work plan come committee committee goals and objectives and topics. So early in the fiscal year, the work plan is really set. And this year, and I've only been on the board, of course, 2 years, but I think we've really well aligned the work planning tasks with the strategic plan. That's been sort of an operative for this year.
I think also in response to the question, as I understand it, and you can correct me, 2 working days a month, 10 months of the year, a committee day and a full board day. Is that, am I correct in that?
Mr. Erickson, it is a full committee day, and then it's a generally half day of board work, about 3 hours, and a lot of work in between.
Mr. Rickman.
As a political novice, this isn't, I might just think I'll ask it, how partisan is this process? Given what you described as what we need to do, what the university needs, how partisan is the actual process?
They're not fighting over the microphone.
I'm not going to be running again, so I will answer this question and spare Regent Beeson perhaps. It is very political. The University Board of Regents operates in a political world, and the selection process is intensely political and sometimes intensely partisan. Painfully partisan. The University of Minnesota Alumni Association has worked very hard for decades to assure that the process of regent selection is less partisan. It is the reason that the University of Minnesota Alumni Association is one of the reasons that the RCAC exists, because prior to the RCAC, it was a purely political Correct. Process. In my opinion, it is all right that there be politics involved, and this is the nature of things. It is all right that it be partisan. It can be oftentimes more partisan than it should be in order for the university to have the best crop of regents to govern that body. But you all can't do anything about that.
Right.
So it is probably best just to accept it as a dealt hand and play the cards in your hand to your best advantage.
Well, thank you for your candor.
Let me just add one other comment to that, which is expect the unexpected in the process. There's going to be highs. There's going to be lows. Manage your emotions. Each one of these races seems to take on its own permutations and it's not necessarily logical. It depends on who weighs in at which point.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Having been part of the process, both
the ugly and the good, and you are both correct in your response, but let me tell you, the process is better today than it was 20 years ago. And the ugly usually comes when something enters into the process that is not copacetic or part of the process, when one body or the other, or one group or the other, or one party or the other starts to bring forward candidates that were not selected by the Regents Advisory Council, or were not, you had heard that there used to be congressional district meetings, that the congressional districts would get involved, not recommended by the congressional districts, or not recommended by the higher education committees. That has happened. And when that enters in, the politics enters, it has gotten ugly. So to all of you, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the process is much better now than it was 15 years ago. It's much more, it's certainly more open and certainly less party affiliation. However, if you don't have a thick skin, don't start. You better have a thick skin.
Mr. Thatcher.
May I make one other comment about that? as a candidate, as you move forward, as you talk to various legislators, you will hear a lot of rumors about so-and-so's got the inside track, so-and-so's out, this isn't. Believe none of it. Believe absolutely none of it. You can only control what you do and how you present yourself. And what seemed like a sure shot yesterday, today goes poof. So you must have an inner confidence that the value that you would bring to the Board of Regents is such that the legislators with whom you are speaking will recognize that. And absolutely ignore all of the rumor, all of the innuendo, all of the garbage. It will detract you from your ability to bring your best self forward. And the legislature and the legislators deserve to see you at your very best. They deserve to see the candidate at his or her very best, not someone who is distracted by rumor and falsities.
Member Thatcher?
Jim, I just would like to add that I think it's important to realize, and unusually so, that I think there's nobody in situ in either house, in either body or on either side of the aisle, who's ever been in situ before. I mean, this is all new to them, brand new, and that's a real problem for everybody in the process. But I think that indicates to me, and I would prefer to speak to you and others, that therefore there will be more likely an attempt to form a consensus as to what result there is. And I don't mean in the sense of pairings or anything like that, but what should we do about this? And I think that's a decision will be made by the majority, and that decision will prevail. Does that surprise you?
No. The folks you're going to all be going to see are wonderfully competent, decent people. They are. They're not the people that you cannot ask the question of, Mr. Burns. They're wonderful folks. They're decent people.
For those who might feel that they are not steeped in politics and therefore you might be apprehensive about this process, I would just ask a couple of questions. Have you ever been on your church council? Have you ever been in your professional group head of the compensation committee? Have you ever in your other lives involved yourself in other situations? You have been involved in politics your whole life, I'm sure of it. This is just a different variation on the theme. And so have confidence in your handling of political situations in other aspects of your life. They will come to bear here too.
If I might, I have been at this around this building for some 40 years, and I've seen a lot of these. And to elaborate on Member Thatcher's point, and Mr. Beeson's, my best advice to you would be to get a good guide. Find somebody that's been around here, that is here all the time, a lobbyist, an interest group that can support you, because you can't be here every day, I know that, and you need a guide. And particularly, to Mr. Thatcher's point, this year. I was surprised. I think, Mr. Speaker, the February 28th date sort of surprised me. This happens much later in the process, in the history that I recall. And if you're a candidate in a district, I recall that the district's caucused. And while Chairman Fischbach indicated that that wasn't part of the process, I wouldn't count on that. I could see a district. I could certainly see the 8th district deciding they want to have a caucus and do something. So I think the answer is we don't know. 2 years ago, you could have taken the history of the last two or three rodeos, and it's going to be about the same. I think this year, as pointed out, the early date is somewhat a surprise to me. The issue of whether there is or isn't a caucus of the districts is an open question. I wouldn't take it as given.
She seemed to indicate, Jim, that there wasn't going to be congressional.
Jim, I think that can be very misleading. I think that does not serve our candidates well. Both the speaker and Senator Fischbach indicated that there will not be the caucuses. And let me make a point here. If they did caucus by congressional district, by way of example, in the 8th congressional district, the Democrats would be in charge, coincidentally. And you could get a very, very misleading result. And I will tell you that the result of that caucus is not going to be a first cousin to what happens in the legislature. So I think we need to be very wary, Jim.
Your point is well taken. We don't know.
We don't know. We've been told by Senator Fischbach.
I heard her say that, Jim.
Mr. Chair, 2 years ago there were caucuses, but it was sort of interesting that at least in ours the vote there were only three or four out of 30 or 40 showed up, and the rest voted absentee. You know, you had the option attend. At that point, they'd heard most of the candidates, and they had made up their mind, and they had other things to do. So they sent it in through email or some other means.
I heard a beep. Are you still there, Mr. Anderson?
I am still here.
And did Laura join us?
This is Steve Hunter. I'm on my phone now.
Oh, that was the beep. Welcome, Steve. Drive carefully. Everybody here gets one question, so I'm going to keep it certainly open. You've got some great teachers here, and I know you have questions.
Jim, one more thing while you're waiting for a question. I just want to fall back on Paul's point. As I'm thinking about how my conversation with a lot of it's just getting acquainted, and it isn't even talking about the university. You sort of introduce yourself and your life story, and people find that more interesting than talking about the goals and objectives of the university necessarily. So enjoy the chance to, introduce yourself. This is very much a people business. It always has been, and you'll find some interesting things out about the legislators as well.
Jim, I would think or suggest that they use their local legislator to either guide them to the places, the people they should go to, or maybe they will be on the committee that would be important, that at least you would have someone that has an ear for you what is going on. Because other than that, like they said, you could have someone locally or in the capital here to guide you around, but your local legislator would be a good source of guiding you as to where to go.
Mr. Beeson, 2 years ago, were you able to get quality, if you will, appointments with everyone on the two relevant committees that met tell us how hard that is to do and how many they have to see of that, and then how many of the other 201 they have to meet with?
It was not that difficult to get appointments. They're awaiting those calls, and you can set up the appointments. I would also try to get to as many or all the people in your congressional district, because they are the opinion makers, people that know you or know of you or who are going to hear from constituents, and so that's a secondary area to make contact with. And then I would need to meet with the leadership. They'll block out chunks of time and make themselves available to meet with candidates over several days, but it probably won't be till late in the process. The idea of having a champion and a legislator is really critical, especially in the House. They will carry your name around for you and be able to talk to you in ways that you're going to be shielded from. So if you can get that, that's invaluable.
The floor is open. Mr. McMillan.
You, I think, Mr. Beeson, did you have a chance, or did the committees call all the candidates last time and have any kind of a formal interview with you, the higher ed committees?
Yes, you may have covered this earlier, but there's generally two meetings of the Joint Higher Ed Committee. The first is an interview, and you'll sit there among all the other candidates and present for 10 or 15 minutes, and it's sort of rotated through, and then they reconvene a week later and make the vote. I don't remember if there are questions and answers. I don't think there were during that.
Keep waiting for questions because I know you have them.
I have one question for either of you. Any suggestions or guidelines for what kind of prepared information we should provide to legislators in order for them to see us at our best, as you said, Maureen? Is there any suggestion you have along those lines?
I would say you want a bio that is brief, and you want a reason why you are running that is very brief. These are very busy people, and they have just gotten out of meeting on transportation or funding of schools or something else, and then you are coming in, and you have to immediately grab their attention. The appointment may be blocked for 15 minutes. You're lucky if you get 15 minutes. This is going to be wild, this session. So you may have 5 minutes. So you want to have your elevator speech ready, and you want to have a leave behind that you can that will rest on their desks. It is possible that they will never look at the leave behind. I can't imagine how they incorporate the volumes of information that they get plunked on their desk, but you still want that, and you want to introduce yourself with it. You want to be brief. You want to be cogent. And then after there is a back and forth between you and the legislator about what his or her top issues are, and you're comparing it what your one or two top issues are as well, you really want to ask that person for their vote in a yes or no question. You want to say, may I have your vote, Senator so-and-so? And if Senator so-and-so says yes, you want to ask, may I use your name as a supporter with these other individuals that I'm going to be meeting with? You shouldn't shy away. These are people who are used to asking other people for their vote.
You've asked for money before, right?
Yes, and lucky here in Minnesota that we don't have to, that you all are not having to ask for money. But you want to ask people for their vote. You want to ask people for your ability to use their name with other individuals. And then you want to believe none of it. Because it may change. It may change.
I might ask the two of you and also Regent Larson, who is here, have been gone through this. Were all your meetings with individual legislators at the Capitol, or did you find it useful or appropriate to meet in the district on the weekends? How did you mix where you met people, and what was their receptiveness to that?
Mr. Chair, I believe it was here at the legislature because it's where they're conducting their business right now. Just going back to the other point, though, about as I made my comments, is put together a list of supporters, primarily non-political. You know, who are the leader? If you're in a district seat, who are the leaders? Who influences, whether they're in business or they're in labor or wherever? Who are the people that really sort of drive that people look to for this? And I found that to be really helpful. The bio piece is important too, but it's a 10-second look, and they'll flip it over and they'll move on.
Were any of your meetings, Dr. Reed, in the district, or were they all here at the Capitol?
My meetings were wherever the legislator wanted them to be, and it was always here.
And Regent Larson, what was your experience?
The vast majority of mine were here, unless I actually knew one of the legislators and had something in common with them, you know, like our kids were on the same team or something or whatever, but almost all of them were here. because that was what was easiest for them.
I do recall, Mr. Chair, that I did drive down to Rochester, met with a legislator on a Saturday morning, and their calendars open up. That really impressed, you know, if you're willing to drive to Duluth or go down to Rochester or wherever, you're sending a signal that you really want this position and you want their vote. And that, all things being equal, that makes a big difference.
President Kennedy?
Any reason for or expectation that there will be follow-up meetings after making an appointment and talking with legislators?
I think you want to leave the impression that you are willing to do anything that would be constructive in furthering your own candidacy. So for some legislators, they may want a second look or a second opportunity to consider a candidate. For other legislators, they don't. They've seen what they need to see, and they're so you will need to read the language, the unspoken word to judge it, and then make sure that all legislators know that you are at their disposal to help them make the most informed decision that they can.
Mr. Thatcher,
I'd like to follow on Speaker's addendum to Dr. Reed's comment that it is subject to change without notice because things do happen. And but when someone makes a commitment to you, I would be sure to extend my hand and say exclusively, "Thank you very much. I'll rely on it."
Shake the hand. These are very decent people. If they shake your hand, they're gonna hold their word. I you know, there are times that
unusual things happen. Well, they had to trade a voter, but they had to do something else. They mean to keep their word, but sometimes things happen.
Mr. Ister.
Yes, many of these legislators have weekends or they have a short recess and they have meetings within their district. And I've been at several of them where there's maybe four or five people only show up because of circumstances. And that is a good time to get a one-on-one basis with them because really they're out there to find out things. And I would suggest if you could implement a picture of yourself on a short resume, because faces, you can't quite remember that. You can remember the name, but you can't put the face on it. So if you can get their schedule from their office as to when they're going to go through their district, they have these meetings. They'll maybe last an hour or two, and their constituents sometime will show up and sometimes they won't. So it's a good time to talk to them. I don't know whether they all do or not, but a lot of them do.
Jim, I need to leave. I want to wish you all well in the process. Sincerely, thank you for doing this, for stepping forward. It's a wonderful thing for the state. This university drives the state. It drives the economic engine. The unique fact, which nobody in this room knows yet but will know, about the 12 persons who have been recommended from this group, Kenyon is not a very large town. But three of the 12 are married to a lady from Kenya. Correct, Robert?
Nice.
That sounds conspiracy.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Speaker. The floor is open. Let me ask the candidates, are there other things that you see our Regent Candidate Advisory Council being able to do that would be of assistance to you? What would you like to see us do in support of you? Does it make sense to try and – I will talk to the chairs, and maybe they think it would be an efficient way to have some kind of, let's call it, event where you could see 10 people at once and at least shake their hand and spend a few minutes. It's not a quality interview. So if you have suggestions either now or later, we would entertain them, and please be in touch with Chair Baylor or myself.
Mr. Chair, may I raise just a point of information? In previous cycles, the University of Minnesota Alumni Association was the one that hosted the candidate forum. And it is possible that with the change in the CEO of the Alumni Association, that the handoff did not occur. But I would be very happy to be in touch with the with Bill Esten, who is the CEO of the Alumni Association, and if the candidates and the legislature felt that it would be useful to have such a forum, it will happen.
The Alumni Association would be the perfect venue, it seems to me, and we'd encourage you to explore that with them, and it certainly would help the process. More time across the table, or?
As long as you don't have to be an alum to attend it.
You do not. There is no requirement that the members of the Board of Regents must be an alum.
Well, I thought, Dr. Reed, my recollection of that forum the last time that I did it, which was going to be six years ago, there was a fairly large group of people that showed up. I was frankly kind of surprised. And a lot of questions came from what I'm going to call the public. You know, in many cases, I'm sure they were alumni. But they were pretty good questions. And I think it was probably good because it kind of allowed the public, if you will, or members of the public, to participate. Mm-hmm. So if you think you could arrange that, I think
it might be good. Mm-hmm. Member Taylor.
Candidate Orientation Committee Chair Erickson, thank you. David, to second your comment, I was there.
Okay.
And it was in a large meeting room across the street in the Capitol, either on the second or the third floor. And I remember it particularly.
123, Steve Hunter tells us.
Thank you, Steve. It wasn't on the second or the third floor.
I thought it was in Williams Arena or something.
And, I mean, just in particular, I can recall you, David, commenting about the College of Liberal Arts and how well they had managed their expense profile vis-a-vis overhead cost of burden versus teaching and instruction. So there was one 6 years ago.
Dr. Reed, I'd make a suggestion that it not be here, that it be at the History Center, that it be at the end of the day, and at the end of a legislative day, and that people be encouraged to believe there might be a bite to eat and a drink to be had.
Well, you mean people come for the eat and the drink?
Whatever gets them there. I would strongly urge that, and I think that's the way you really assure a good turnout and it would be much more efficacious.
Thank you for that suggestion. I know that these forums have been held at different locations in the past. I think that either 2 years ago or 4 years ago it was held at the University of Minnesota. I don't believe that the turnout that was too far away. I mean, the purpose of this, I would guess, from the candidates' point of view, is that you get to meet the legislators. There's another purpose, and that is that the legislators get to meet you, and that the public gets to meet you, and the legislators get to see you in action with the public. So we will investigate what has been the past history of these and what is the location that has served those purposes best. But thanks for the idea.
Mr. Beeson?
I think we have to be clear about who the audience is. If the audience is the legislature, the meeting should be held here. They will likely, they're so, for reasons you've all talked about and understand, they're not going to move around during the day off-site with the pace that they're going to be undergoing right now. So if you were to have an event, might think about having it here. It would be an open meeting event. With presentations and questions and answers, and get 15 or 20 of them here, that's a big deal.
We'll take that as a to-do. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions or suggestions from the members? All right. Well, we have, we thank you for coming. We certainly thank your candidacies. Chair Balow is going to wrap us up here, but I would simply say before she does that if I were the chairman or the stockholders in any public company in this country, I would be honored to have all of you as the board of directors. And so we thank you for the quality you bring to this, and we wish you the best in your endeavors.
I think you took part of my speech because, you know, you hear words like opponents and competitors and that sort of thing. Everybody's here because they want to serve the University of Minnesota. Each of you would make an excellent regent, or you would not have been on the list to be sent to the legislature. We would, as Jim said, we'd be proud to have each of you, but there are more of you than there are vacancies, so the best thing we can do is go as a team. And I figure your job right now is to introduce yourself so the legislators know who you are and why we picked you. You know, even a little 3 to 5 minute presentation, it doesn't hurt to have that because that might be the maximum you have. I don't know, I'd probably go so far as to put a name tag on because some people remember name tags better than they do just the verbal, someone saying their name and the district you're from. And don't forget your own delegation. But you're not at all competitors. Just tell them what you can bring to the university. Tell them why we picked you. We're so proud of you. You're a great class and a great team, and we're really pleased. And for the incumbents, don't forget to say what you did. You know, why? What did you leave there? And your enthusiasm, your willingness, and ability to work for the University of Minnesota are just remarkable. And thank you. So those are my closing remarks. And anything we can do to help you, we will. And thank you, too, for the advice.
Thank you.
That
thank you to the committee.
Half to death, Maureen. But anyway, you're telling it like it is, so that's good. All right.
And in closing, I would just encourage you to get to know each other. You're going to be a band of brothers with one woman going through, I hate to call it a